Talk Radio.
All right, Hector, so you want to talk about the life cycle of a successful sale on the internet? Is that like here today, gone tomorrow, that kind of thing?
Well, sort of. You know, think about it. I mean, we live in the age of the internet.
Yeah.
And on a daily basis, how many new websites come out?
Billions.
And on top of that, how many people are trying to sell products? A bazillion. Same type of thing. And of all the ones that are out there, some are extremely successful.
Yeah.
You know, usually a few. Some are, you know, pretty successful, and then other ones are like, eh.
Yeah.
And the reality is, the bulk of them are eh.
Yeah.
Most of them really don't make it. And there's a horde of number of great products that didn't make it. And on the other hand, it's a bunch of mediocre stuff. Stuff like gangbusters. Why is that? So this show today is really about that. It's talking about why things sell on the internet and why things don't sell on the internet. And what people can do to, you know, increase their odds so that they make more money selling their stuff on the internet. But before we get to that, call in number 213-943-3808. That's 213-943-3808. Of course, if you call us and ask a question, we'll let you tell us your website so you can sell some stuff on
there
the internet. We also want to thank Scott's Discount Movers for being our sponsor all year. If you're going to get ready to move, you want to check them out. Great pricing, great service, great after the sale, you know, support and follow up and clean up and all that kind of stuff. They really did a great job for us. We were really happy that we used them, and we're glad to endorse them.
And my chiropractor's happy about that, too.
Yeah. And also, check out Land and Sea Travel with Mike Franks. If you're getting ready to do a cruise or anything like that, check them out because they can really get you set up. I know they have a bunch of specials because I was perusing their website yesterday.
Speaking of cruising,
yeah.
It used to be a lot easier to cruise on down the road to sell things online today. Is it just because there's so many products out there that people are jaded?
Right. And not yet. It's, every channel that you go into is massive amounts of stuff. So people used to say, you know, when social media first came, oh, you got to be on social media.
Mm-hmm.
When blogging started taking off, it's, oh, you got to be on blogging. You know, and then pay-per-click, of course, then you got to be on pay-per-click.
It used to be a lot easier back then. you a website and a search engine. That was
about
it.
But today, you know, there's so much going on. And, you know, there's over 7 billion people, and of that, probably half of them are using the internet all the time. Heck, people walk around with internet computers in their hands half the time, walking into walls and stuff. So
they don't get hit by passing trucks.
Right. So in this show today, we're going to talk about four very important elements that lead to successful sales.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is having a good internet product or service.
Right.
Another one is how to get found.
Right.
Then the next one is how to increase conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one is to how to create positive buzz so that the whole mechanism continues going. And any one of these items missing can really sort of hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're missing two of them, it's pretty much a death nail. I mean, that's really the bottom line. But by the same token, you can actually have a great product and fall flat on your face because you did one of these four elements improperly. So
take it from the top?
Yeah, you know, I'll take it from the top. Okay. I mean, think about it this way. You know, the best thing you can have to get going with is a great product.
Right.
Now, the reality is there's not tons of great products.
Right. Or what you might think is great,
but
browser might think it's so-so. You know, because what makes your product great?
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. Everybody can say, I've got a great product, but okay, I'm from Missouri. Show me. What do you got?
Now, you don't have to have a great product, but having a great product or service, something new and unique, is really cool. But it doesn't have to be new and unique.
Right.
And the best example I can give you is the iPhone.
Right.
When the iPhone came out in 2007, there were already smartphones out. That wasn't new. There were smartphones with graphics images. That wasn't new.
Right.
There were smartphones that did video. That wasn't new. There were smartphones that had PDAs built into them. They had touch screens.
Yeah.
All of that stuff was new. What was new about the iPhone was it was super easy to use. That was the cool thing.
I mean, once you could figure out how to actually use it, looking at it going, okay, how do I make a phone call on this?
Well, I mean, in the early days, they had an interface that was relatively easy to learn compared to a Palm Pilot, which I had in that time. It was much easier to learn than a Palm Pilot.
Right.
So the average, you know, person could learn how to use it very quickly. And on top of that, they were in the same price range as these other smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
So they took off. But Apple also did something else really well. Apple's probably one of the best marketing companies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So they not only had a great product, they also had a great marketing.
Yeah.
And they also had a great marketing plan. So if you really want to study the anatomy of a great sale, that product is probably one of the best that you can follow. And on top of that, this product was such a great product
mm-hmm.
that within 2 years of its existence, it launched a whole new industry.
Right.
And that's people making products for the Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that on purpose. They could have made their own, you know, protective cases and all this other kind
right.
of stuff, and they didn't on purpose
mm-hmm.
because they wanted industry support.
Right.
Because when Samsung and all them guys started coming out with their own stuff, they came out with their own accessory cases and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Apple didn't do that. They didn't do that on purpose because they wanted industry support. So there's lots of things that when you, if you look at the Apple, it made them succeed. They had a really good product. It was solid. It didn't break easily.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't lock up easily. It was very secure.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, 10 years later, do you know that the Apple iPhone is still the number one selling phone in the world?
Wow.
And it's far from the cheapest, but
wow.
it's still the number
yeah.
one selling
mm-hmm.
smartphone in the world. And again, its competition has leapfrogged them several times with a bunch of other really good stuff. But guess what? They've done something that all good companies do. They don't sit on their laurels.
Mm-hmm.
They continue to upgrade the product to make it a flagship product so that everybody else is measured against them. So when Samsung comes out with their latest smartphone, Note, or whatever the heck it is, it has to be benchmarked against the iPhone. Now, you and I are not iPhone users. We're not lovers of Apple by any stretch of the imagination.
Not Apple heads.
Yeah, but the reality is they have done something that few companies will ever equal. So think about that. When you look at it, it wasn't all the other goody good things that they did. It was
mm-hmm.
they had a really good product. They did really good marketing. They did really good social. They did really good buzz.
Yeah.
And, of course, they've actually built that into a tribe of people that follows Apple.
Yeah, well, that helps. You have, you know, a bunch of addicts.
Well, I mean, they've done that because, again, when they sell you an Apple and you buy an Apple, you know
yeah.
that it's going to work.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, Apple has always
yeah.
stepped up and taken care of their customers.
Yeah, it's hard to come up with a good sales pitch where you've got a bunch of addicts standing outside in the rain waiting for the store to open so they can buy something
hey,
at full price.
All you got to do is watch the news. They don't even have to advertise.
No.
They got all these people standing. It's got to be good if you're standing in the rain and staying in tents overnight and all that other kind of stuff.
Well,
so,
they got to be really, really crazy.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those things that, you know, if you have a good product,
mm-hmm.
it makes a big difference. But
how do you translate that into, you know, a wannabe, you know, somebody's come up with some new product or new business, and then you got to compete against those guys?
Well, the reality is being first is
yeah.
a really important deal. Think about Xerox.
Mm-hmm.
Xerox was the first copier.
Mm-hmm.
They held, you know, all sway for 20 years. And even though there were better copiers out there and all that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
they were still holding their own for
mm-hmm.
a long time. So for about a 40-year period,
yeah.
Xerox was the
big dog.
Out.
Yeah.
And now they're like, hey,
mm-hmm.
because they didn't keep up. They didn't
mm-hmm.
keep leapfrogging everybody else. They stopped. And once you stop,
the other guys will run you over.
That's right. The other guys will run you over. So you only have a short window of being the best and the newest and all that kind
sure.
of stuff. And you have to really make sure that you stay on top of it. That's one thing you could say about Steve Jobs when he's with the company. He cracked the whip and he said, look, we always got to continue to fight to be better.
Right.
And that was one of the things he did really well. Microsoft tries to do that as well as they do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't quite do it as well, but they also try and do that same type of thing. When you think about products in general, though, they all have a life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So Apple's 10 years old, still a big dog, though. But the whole industry is matured. So there's not just the Apple class.
Right.
There's a whole class of products out there in that industry. So if you want to be successful in the smartphone industry, what you got to do is pick a niche
mm-hmm.
and be the big dog in that niche.
Right, right. The one industry I kind of like, you pointed out in the blog, was the bottled water industry.
Right.
I mean, who knew you could make a fortune selling water in a bottle?
Right. Well, when I think about
it. Sometimes when you look at the prices, it's like they're charging more for that water in that bottle than gasoline.
Right.
You know?
The funny thing about bottled water, again, in the 80s, nobody was buying bottled water. I mean, maybe somebody would buy a Perrier or something
yeah.
in a restaurant,
yeah.
but nobody was buying bottled water.
And they look
water.
At them weird.
Yeah, and Bottled water has been around since like the 1600s.
Yeah.
It's not like it was brand new
right.
You started having bottled water. But all of a sudden in the 90s, a lot of people became alarmed about water.
Right. Mainly because I think the bottled water industry put out those reports.
What bottled water did was they didn't have a great product,
right.
Although you need water to be alive.
Yeah.
Okay. But there
was water. I mean, it's not
but
like
there's huge amounts of competition.
It's not like you have to go, shh, we have a secret formula
right.
for our water.
Right.
You know, you can't.
But what they did, what was different,
you know?
Was they marketed the hell out
yeah.
of it. Okay.
Well, it was all marketing.
Yeah. They're marketing. And it had benefits that they pointed out. So, for example, convenience. You want to have your kids going to school and they want to have some water, you put it in your lunch bag, blah, blah, blah. Okay.
That's what canteens were invented for.
As a Boy Scout, again, canteens, thermoses, and all. Yeah, I mean, if you go to my house, most of the water is in our own bottles.
Yeah.
To put in the refrigerator. But the convenience factor was a big deal.
Yeah.
And they actually used all kinds of stars.
Right.
Drinking bottled water
right.
and so on. And it became a trendy thing.
Yeah.
And then you also had the health nut gurus saying, hey, if you're not drinking filtered water,
yeah, but of course, when you filter water and you put it in a plastic bottle,
nice.
Okay, how healthy is that? Really?
The plastic bottles in the beginning were unhealthy because a lot of them had PPAs and all that other kind of stuff, but nobody was paying attention.
Right.
So,
because the stars were all drinking.
Right. And here's the thing about bottled water. Bottled water is heavy.
Right.
So I was talking about in the article, you know, there are some things that lend themselves very well to internet sales.
Yeah.
Small items,
yeah.
unique items, cool looking items,
yeah.
items that, you know, people want that are consumable.
Right.
Bottled water is one of those. It's a consumable item.
Yeah.
But heavy items usually don't do as well because of shipping costs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the bottled water industry said, well, we got to just figure out a way to make it so we can ship them. So when you buy bottled water on the internet,
right.
shipping's often included free.
Yep.
That's probably absorbed in the price of the bottled water, but it's shipped free. Now, bottled water industry is very mature today.
Yeah.
So just like the smartphone industry, it's segmented.
Yeah.
There's a billion types of bottled water.
Oh, yeah, and every time we have a scare from a hurricane,
oh, yeah. and
the shelves
they'll
all
go
the
out.
Bottled water,
right.
Which is like, I don't understand that at all, because all I do, you know, is I just keep wine bottles. And then I just fill them up. So I've
but
got all
the reality is, if you wanted to have a clear
so
thing of water, they make these big plastic
water.
Things that you could put in your bathtub
yeah.
and you just fill a tub.
Yeah.
Or you get a 5-gallon drum and fill that. Or, you know, there's plenty of ways of storing
right.
water.
Glass bottles work really well. Because, you know, wine bottles are glass.
Right.
And glass is not going to leach into the water. So it's perfectly.
Well, also, the thing is, if you're doing short term storage,
yeah.
the plastic's not going to leach into the water, too. It has to be on the shelf for a while. For
you have no idea how long that was sitting there in the warehouse before
right.
it got to you, or whether it's sitting out in the sun.
Well, actually, now they actually have to timestamp. So
right.
when you look on the case,
yeah.
it says you got to drink this
right.
by XYZ. Yeah. And after that point, you know, I know PepsiCo actually gives them away.
Yeah. The only guys that impressed me more than the guys that made fortune off the bottled water was the company, I forget where the hell they were. We had this on Worldwide Weird, I guess, a couple of years ago. Where they were selling bottled air.
Another thing you have to be alive.
Apparently, they were doing a brisk sale to places like, you know, Beijing and stuff where the air quality is really bad, where people are actually buying bottled air.
Yes. But again,
okay, now we're just going to sell you the bottle because it's got.
Now, here's the thing. I put a link on the blog
yeah.
that takes you to Amazon, and
right.
it's got a whole page of bottled water.
Right.
But the point, the reason I did that is. The bottled water market is very segmented, just like the smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
So you have very inexpensive smartphones, you have really expensive, then you got the top of the line
right.
Samsungs and Haiwas and
mm-hmm.
and Apples and so on. Well, bottled water is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the top of the line, that they come in glass bottles,
mm-hmm.
okay? And then you have all kinds of segmentation with vitamins and minerals and protein and flavors up the yin yang and so on. Then they have our bottled water has the thinnest plastic, so it's the least impact on the environment. I mean, you name it. The segmentation is wild. But the amount of bottled water is being sold on the internet is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And again, it breaks one of the rules. It's a heavy product, it's a pain in the butt
yeah.
to ship and so on, but they're selling it like it's going out of, like they're running out of water.
Right. So now once you have a good product, how do you put the word out without breaking the bank?
So the reality is, the first thing you got to do is you do got to get found.
Right.
So how do you do that? Well, you always hear people say, you got to do your SEO.
Right.
Well, that, we're talking about on-page SEO, but SEO is a multifaceted hydra type of thing today.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do content marketing a lot of different ways.
Yep.
You got to do other kinds of things, especially if you're brand new and fresh. Pay-per-click is not a bad way to go.
But the thing is, though, having pay-per-clicks, bringing them to a site,
right.
Here's our stuff.
Right. That's not enough.
Right. You got to go a little further.
But you got to get found. So mm-hmm. that also means you have to find an audience if you don't have one.
Right.
Most people don't have an audience. But if you do have a large following in social media, that's
mm-hmm.
really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a following in Blogger, that's really helpful.
Right.
If you're using your blog on social media,
right.
that's really helpful. So on the blog, there's an article, there's a video by the webmaster from Google.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about all the different kinds of SEO types of things that you got to do.
Right.
But you have to do search engine marketing. You have to do a bunch of different things to make sure you get found. And you have to be in a bunch of arenas. You just can't be in one place. I mean, that's hard. That's a hard sell to do.
Right.
It's very rare that somebody puts out a video and all of a sudden it just gets found.
I think a lot of the ones that they claim go viral, I think they're pushed up the hill.
Right.
Because like
absolutely.
I said, when you look at like YouTube, there's 4 billion videos a day that are broadcast on YouTube. So
just
you're
sheer
like a,
mathematics
yeah.
trying to be found on the internet.
You're grain of sand on the beach.
Right. So the reality is 0.1% are found virally where they actually really took off. Even if you look at a couple of the super success stories,
mm-hmm.
like the Aura Brush.
Right.
That guy spent money to do the
yeah.
ad.
Yeah.
And then after they started making some money, they reinvested their money.
Right.
Many, many times to get the marketing off the ground.
Yeah.
And then when they got momentum, that's when things changed.
Off.
That's
right.
when it took off. It's the same thing with not Harry's Razors. What's the other one?
Dollar Shave Club.
Dollar Shave Club. I talk about that one. And same type of thing. He did a video.
Mm-hmm.
They spent money to make that video.
Mm-hmm.
They got it working. They were pushing that video.
Oh, yeah. But that's all they had. They had one video.
Right.
At least with Orbrush, they had a bunch of them.
Right. They sent them out to a bunch of different places.
Done.
Then it got momentum and
yeah.
took off. And then they put money behind that. Then they were able to get a second investor and so
mm-hmm.
on and run it up the hill. Same thing with authors. You know, you've heard the story, you wrote about it not too long ago, the ebook millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reality is the ebook millionaires, most of those didn't
right.
do that virally. I mean, they started out, they spent some money on marketing.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do some seed money. Some of them it was a couple thousand,
mm-hmm.
some of them 30,000.
Yeah, well, in fact, I just had a author that called me the other day and she's got a couple new books. I says, great, you know, what are you spending
right.
to get the word out? She says, I got a very small budget. Well, you know, how small is very small?
Because
you can't get there from here
if it's
zero.
If it's a dollar,
right.
you know.
It's too small. You know,
and again, if you were an author and you had 100,000 people following you, you could do it by pushing it out on social media.
Right.
But if you don't have 100,000 people following
right.
you, it really doesn't matter.
Well, and I even said, you know, we have some ways we can help you, but, you know, there's still a certain amount of labor that has to be done
right.
to get that to happen, and
right.
that's going to represent a certain amount of cost.
Right. And here's the thing. Cost doesn't mean you whip out cash necessarily
right.
out of your pocket. But there's a cost. If you're doing word-of-mouth marketing, there's a whole bunch of time and effort that's going to have to be spent.
That's it, exactly.
I mean, it ain't just going to fall out of trees or something.
Right.
Now, if you got to write the blogs, you have to put out posts every day. There's labor involved to do guerrilla marketing.
Right, there's no free lunch.
There's no free lunch, so you got to get out there and do that.
And most people are willing to do it, so that's one of the best ways you can do it, put a blog. You're a writer.
Right, do a writer. Blog,
write
twice a week.
Right.
Put them out there. Find somebody who can give you distribution. There are places that you can buy distribution.
Yeah, like us.
Yeah, well, one of the companies. But there are companies that just do Facebook distribution.
Right.
But you can find people that will do distribution,
yeah.
but those ain't free.
Well, it's like any business. You know, if you go out and you spent money to set up a business, to put inventory in a business, and you didn't have any money left for advertising, guess what? You deserve to go out of business.
Right.
Well, with the book, there really isn't any inventory.
Right.
You still got to market. And if you're not willing to
still
spend
market.
Marketing money, then you're not going to be found. It's any other business.
If you put it in Amazon, I don't know how many new books they get a day, but
yeah.
it's like a bazillion of books. And you're in a sea of books.
Right.
Getting found in a
oh,
sea
yeah.
of books is not a simple
no.
thing to do.
No.
So, you know, once you've got distribution.
Now, how do you convert it to a customer?
And people are coming to your
right.
website.
How do you get them to buy something?
How do you get them to buy?
Right.
Well, the reality is if they're coming to your homepage, the likelihood of them buying is pretty remote. You really should use landing pages. There's nothing wrong with having a website with a bunch of pages and all kinds of useful information. But if you want to have high conversion rate,
right.
a landing page that's highly focused on a simple, single subject is going to convert much better than a Nexus site, your main site, that has a whole bunch of information on it that's going to lead people astray 19 ways for Sunday, because every little sparkly thing they see, they're going to click on it.
Right.
And it's going to take them away from the message
and
of buy.
Also, too, because like even a blog, can be used to sell.
Right.
But again, you don't always have to sell something to make a sale. Because the point is, it's like with a blog, if you offered a piece of, let's say you've got a book, yeah. offer the first three chapters for free.
Right.
Sign up here. Because once they sign up, now you got a hook in the fish,
right.
and you've got a database that you can use. Now you can go back and start reaching out, you know, doing some drip marketing to eventually get them to buy the book or some other
stuff. I know we were working with an author several years ago, and he had already had a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, why don't you take a piece of each chapter
mm-hmm.
and write a blog about it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of times a chapter will have four or five subjects in
right.
the chapter. I said, well, that's four or five blogs.
Mm-hmm.
You drip it out that way Absolutely. And then put a hook out there that says, hey, get my book for free or whatever. You know, every 100th person gets a free book and the other people get the first three chapters. Or what? There's lots of ways of fishing. You just have to fish. But that's labor intensive. You got to do it. It's not going to just, you know.
Right.
The biggest myth is you make some great mousetrap and everybody's
right.
going to beat
it. Doesn't happen.
That don't happen. It only happens when God touches you in the head. It's okay, you know. You know
what I call the Cinderella
right.
concept. You know, you don't get too many of those calls.
Yeah, it doesn't really happen very often. So if you read in the blog lists a whole bunch of things that your landing page ought to have. You know, it should be a click-on phone number.
Mm-hmm.
It should have,
that
you know,
offer.
Some kind of compelling offer that mm-hmm. makes them want to give up their information.
Right.
It should be very easy to navigate and understand.
Right.
It should have all the useful information above the fold,
mm-hmm.
like a testimonial,
right.
like a video testimonial. Mm-hmm. You know, people, somebody, how great it is.
Right.
Endorsements from celebrities or whoever you can get. You know, all the useful information that's going to give them the warm and fuzzies
mm-hmm.
need to be above the fold. So when they land there, they say, oh, yeah. I want to go ahead and spend my $4.95 on this ebook, or whatever it is, okay? Or $2,000 on that really cool-looking walk-in tub.
Right.
Whatever it is, because, again, the rules are you really got to make yourself unique, and then you got to convince the customer that you're the go-to person that ought to be buying from.
Okay. But then that still isn't the end of the process.
Right. That's not the end of the process, because just because you made a sale, now you got to repeat the whole thing. And the next thing that's going to make that happen is creating positive buzz
mm-hmm.
from everything you do. So every time you got a sale, the ideal thing would be you get a positive feedback of some
right.
kind. That is in writing or video mm-hmm. or auditory or something. Somebody giving you some kind of praise
mm-hmm.
that yours is to cast me out.
Right.
That's what you want to have. How do you do that? Well,
ask for it.
For most people, if you never ask, you never get.
Right.
So you know the old adage from the Bible? You know, the second thing is maybe you got to give them a little bit of an incentive, because the reality is happy customers for the most part are lazy customers
mm-hmm.
when it comes to giving you.
Yeah, you do something
kudos.
Wrong and
right.
they'll raise the roof. Before
right.
you try to get somebody that's a pleased customer to say, hey, thanks.
Right.
It's like pulling teeth.
Right. If you piss somebody off, the rule of thumb is, you know, 10 happy customers are going to be negated by one pissed off
right.
customer. I mean, that's the reality. And there are studies that say that the number is much bigger than that. I remember reading one about banking, and this study showed that you pissed off one banking customer, they told 57 people how you screwed them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But here's the thing. If you've got an unhappy customer,
mm-hmm.
you can use social media and so on to manage
right.
that customer. And what you want to do is you really want to take care of the angry customer.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn an unhappy customer
yeah.
into a happy customer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best kind.
Absolutely.
Because now you've shown where something went wrong and
yeah.
you made it right.
And I don't care how great your product is or how conscientious a business person you are. Sooner or later, you're
going
to have somebody the wrong way.
That's
just the way it is.
Right.
No such thing as having – you can't please all the people all the time.
Right. So
no,
you have to have a mechanism to take care of disgruntled people. I mean, that's just the way it is. And if you don't have that, the disgruntled people are going to eat your lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, for every one of them, they're going to negate
yeah.
10 good ones.
Right. Plus, too, if you're building a positive buzz, this leads on to the next part of the equation, which is every bit as important as everything else you're doing, which is another sale.
Right.
Whether you're selling some other product, an upsell, continuing product, and
right.
all those things are important, because the hardest, the most expensive part is getting somebody to buy once.
Right.
The most important thing, though, is to get them to buy again and again and again. That's
and,
really
and the second money. Sale is much easier than the first sale because you now got their information.
Yeah, and you got
more. Yeah. You have to also work on making sure you got a good experience. Mm-hmm. You give them that first really good experience, it really makes it a lot easier for that second sale and third sale and so on. But you also got to go back to them.
Right.
The process doesn't stop. After you've done 1, 2, 3, and 4, now you got to do 2 through 4 over and over again. And it doesn't stop forever. And there's a little thing in there that once that product starts to become mature, you got to upgrade.
Right.
You got to improve the process. You got to improve the product and so on. If you don't do that, eventually you fall off the stuff. So now we're starting to run out of time. When you get to the really cool Worldwide Weird.
Yeah, well, you know, we're getting toward Halloween.
Right.
So continuing with the spooky vibe. And so I got some spooky stories here. This is kind of cool. So the man captures photo of ghost in famous haunted hotel. And according to everybody that was there, this was not, something that was Photoshopped. But if you look at this picture, you can see there's this a little girl.
It's something, yeah.
You know, in like a white gown walking up the stairs. Now, apparently, when they took the picture, they didn't see the girl. In fact, when you back up in the picture, you can see everybody talking to each other. This only happened after they processed the film. And they said.
So how did they know the girl was there?
They didn't until they actually looked at the pictures. She was only in the picture. They didn't see her. And like I said, there's a whole bunch of people there having like
a cocktail party.
A
person with a feather doing like that.
No. And like I said, this particular hotel was the one that Stephen King used to base the story of The Shining. So this is apparently something that they see quite a lot, but they didn't actually see this. They only caught it on the film. It's usually the other way around. They see it, but you don't get a picture of it. Well, this was the other way. And like I said, this has apparently happened quite a few times in this particular hotel. But that wasn't the only spooky thing we had. I thought this was kind of funny. This is one of those things that says, spooky footage emerges of David Gilmour's abandoned 10 million pound country house. Okay. This is a guy who.
So it doesn't weigh 10 million pounds. It costs 10 million.
I mean, this is like a very expensive man. This is a mansion. Okay. And it says, footage has emerged inside David Gilmour's now abandoned $10 million house in South Oxfordshire. The images seem to suggest that the Pink Floyd vocalist just abandoned the home on a whim. So the 11-bedroom Bookend Manor was once home to renowned recording studios by Rod Stewart, Tom Jones, and other famous vocalists. He says, but the photo of the pool table seems to have been abandoned in mid-game. Rooms have wallpaper recklessly torn down from them, with the only thing hanging being in the recording studio is a picture of a well-worn piano. And it says that the dining room literally contains a table with seating for 10 people with plates sitting at it as though ready to be used.
So everybody just sort of took off.
Yeah, well, then again, it just shows you some people just have more money than they need. You know, because here's a 10 million pound, what's that, about $15 million?
Yeah, that's a chunk
of
money.
That is not what you would call a fixer-upper, but it's kind of been turned into a fixer-upper. Personally, if I found that thing, it's like, hey, squatter's rights, fire's keepers, you know. Because it's quite a place, and apparently it's furnished. Using it.
Wow.
But my top one, and this one was really kind of spooky, almost scary. This harrowing viral footage shows a 3-year-old riding a 20-foot python. Now, granted, this was in Vietnam, okay? So
the
python was a family pet. This is the video. A 3-year-old is happily straddling the reptile like a horse, which is swimming through the devastated floodwaters that have rampaged the area. This is a house pet, but it's a 20-foot-long python. And when you look at it, it's kind of scary.
He's sitting on it, but the thing is, the thing whips around. He's like food.
Well, that's what they're saying.
Is it dog food?
Yeah, they said that the family's had the pet for 4 years, and it's very gentle. And they said it was a very rainy day.
And they feed it the neighbors.
Right. But they said, literally, it just takes 2 seconds, and 6 men wouldn't be able to get the child out of the clutch if the python decided, let me see what that's
that is.
All right, kid, you're bothering me.
You know? You have to lop off his head or something real quick, and then you might die. Anyway, I know we only got a couple of minutes left. I want to remind the listeners out there to go to the notes page. The notes page has a good dozen articles just on this subject. We've written about this subject extensively. The things we talk about haven't changed literally anyway at all. Writing about it, so check those out. For the Club WQ members, go to the Dropbox. You're going to find a whole bunch of stuff there. Next week's show, we're going to talk about the top content marketing tips and best practices for the 21st century. Because we haven't talked about that in several months. So
keep working the web to win, gang.
Until next time, guys.
And be careful what Python you ride.
There you go.
Say Monty Python.
Yeah.